friends, thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. And we love to bring you shows right here on Progressive Radio Network. I'm so excited when I look at the archive shows and see that well over 100,000 people, I think it's up to 100,700 people, have been downloading and listening to our podcasts. And we'd love to hear from you. What would you like to hear about? Get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And a lot of our doctors and professionals who have been on our shows have told us that people have gotten in touch with them and are using their services from hearing their show right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And that's what we like to do, bring you the best people in the field who know what they're talking about, who are very involved in the topic that they're sharing, and who can help you make the best decisions for yourself, yourselves, and your family the natural alternative way. And that's what Dr. Zamperone and myself have been involved with, myself, since 1964. Yes, folks, that's a six. So it's getting to be quite a while, and there's no end in sight. I learn new things every day. And today, we're so happy to bring on board our guest, and that is Rio Oleski. Rio has a bachelor's degree in humanities from the University of California at Berkeley and a master's in humanities from San Francisco State University. So he is certainly a California person. He's been a serious student of astrology since 1967 and a professional astrologer since 1976. Rio also writes monthly columns for local and national publications, and he has a website called StarWatcher.com. So thank you so much for joining us today, Rio.
Well, thank you, Ellen. Thank you for asking me to be here.
Now, one thing I want to remind our listeners, well, not remind them because I didn't mention it before, but you have an excellent book called A Manual for the Modern Mystic, How to Practice Being in the Presence of God, and that's a spiritual focus written by Rio Oleski. And you're so wonderful at being able to do by phone astrological consultations. So you certainly bring a lot to the table in your area of expertise.
Thank you.
Now let's go back in time, Rio. And how did you get involved in this segment in terms of your lifestyle?
In terms of astrology?
In terms of astrology and the spiritual focus, that would be great.
Well, I've always been interested in what makes me tick. Why do I do what I do, think what I think, feel what I feel? And astrology was the first link in the chain of unraveling myself, I guess. But in reality, what it pointed me toward was spirituality. In fact, one of the things I constantly remind my students about is that studying astrology is actually just an excuse for studying the development of human consciousness. And I think that's really what we're here to be doing, is developing consciousness. In other words, it's not just my experience in life, but it's everybody's experience in life. What are the options? And that's one of the things I tried to bring out in the book, A Manual for the Modern Mystic, is what are the options for consciousness? What are the options for developing that consciousness? And hopefully, if more people get on that journey and ask those questions, then I think we'd probably all get along a lot better.
Well, that's a universal view, certainly. And what about in your personal life? I mean, was this a real break from your training in terms of growing up with your parents, or were they involved in spiritual thought as well?
Oh, God, no. In fact, I remember one time I was in San Francisco, and I went to a metaphysical bookstore trying to find an astrology book, which, and I've been studying astrology since the late 60s, so in those days, you walked into a metaphysical bookstore and chock-a-block with books except in one section. You knew that was the astrology section. There were simply no books available. So I went to this one bookstore in San Francisco, and it was upstairs in a Victorian house, and it was decorated in, you know, very heavy velvet curtains and whatnot. It was kind of interesting and creepy all at the same time. Anyway, I finally found
perfect
the book.
For Halloween. We're at our Halloween show.
Right. So I finally found a book and went downstairs, and I'm leaving, you know, walking down the sidewalk, and I had this terrible fear that somebody that my mother knew, a friend of my mother's, would see me and tell her that I was coming out of this building. And the whole thing was absurd because this was in San Francisco. My parents lived in Los Angeles, and my parents didn't really have that many friends. So the possibility of that happening was basically slim and none. But it just gave you the idea that, no, this was not something that my parents were interested in or into or aware of. And although I must say that as the years went by, they became more and more, let's say, accepting of what I was doing, even though I don't think they ever quite got it.
But they were accepting because they sent you to Berkeley, unless you sent yourself to Berkeley, because that was certainly a very, very progressive school.
Yeah, well, I remember in 1964, we used to sit around when we ate dinner, we'd watch the news, and there was this little box of a TV. And so I remember Mario Savio jumping up on the police car and giving a speech and saying, I said to myself, well, that's where I want to go to college. And I was graduating that year, so I went to Berkeley the next year and probably learned as much of important things in life, such as consciousness and spirituality, out of the classroom than I ever learned in the classroom. Berkeley in those days was just an amazing, amazing place. And that was also in the mid-60s, pretty much when I think the counterculture movement or even concept of a counterculture was born.
Yeah, it was a great place. I used to be there quite a bit myself, and we used to call it Berserkly.
Oh, yeah.
We had a lot of things going on.
That's right.
It was definitely expansive in terms of consciousness, I will
say. Oh, yeah, no doubt about that. All kinds of things going on.
Now, what led you to write this excellent book, A Manual for the Modern Mystic? And I want to share with our listeners that I think this is really a different kind of book, and I get a lot of books. You know, I get tons of books in the mail every single day of guests who'd like to be on radio shows. Some of them I look through. I'm not so excited. Many of them are excellent, but I feel like the information I have a grasp on already, so after the show is over, I'll give away the book. I can't keep all of them. I would need to move and get a bigger house. But this book, I have found how I use it is I just kind of open it, you know, do a little meditative relaxation and then just open the book. And there's so much in here that really brings together many teachings of spirituality. And I find that it's almost like a runestone or something that speaks to whatever the situation is in my life at the time. So it's really, really inspirational.
Well, thank you. That's very, very good to hear. What led me to write the book was, again, you know, I'm an astrologer. I've been doing this professionally for about 40 years, and yet my prime focus in life is spiritual, you know, spiritual growth and consciousness development. And I never give any kind of reading to a client without at some point, if they don't bring it up, I will at some point ask them, so what do you do for your spiritual life? What does your spiritual life look like or all about? And most of the time people respond, and other times they just kind of look at me quizzically and start talking about religion.
Right, and, so that's interesting. The difference, they may just say, well, I'm a Catholic or I'm Jewish,
right.
And
yeah,
that's
exactly
what they feel the description is of their spiritual life.
Well, I think most people who come to me, actually, they apologize for being Catholic or Jewish or whatever it is, you know, and I say, no, that's not what we're talking about. But anyway, at one point it occurred to me that the signs of the zodiac were clues. They were, I wouldn't call them riddles necessarily, but they're definitely metaphors, let's put it that way, for something much deeper and much greater. So I started thinking about the possibility that each of the signs of the zodiac could actually represent a different, what I call universal law, or what we might call a spiritual principle. And so with that in mind, I started writing the book. And some of it came relatively easily, and some of it didn't. For me, there's nothing more daunting than looking at a blank computer screen and realizing I have to come up with a bunch of words and information. But I did it, and so each chapter has a little information about the sign. For example, the first law is the law of creativity, which is based on the sign Aries, which is the first sign of the zodiac. And so then I would talk about Aries a little bit and the nature of that sign, and then go on and talk, expand it much more, of course, and talk about it more as a universal principle and a way of not only developing consciousness, but in a sense, helping us to live our lives. One of the things that I found in the metaphysical studies that I've done is, in my life, is just how many books were really meaningful to me that were basically how to live your life kind of thing. So this is my humble effort to contribute to that.
Well, I really definitely have found it extremely interesting. So,
thank you.
It was a project, and now you have it ready. So what are some of the aspects of the various signs, let's say? You know, people often know their sun signs. Mm-hmm. But as a professional astrologer, I'm sure that's almost frustrating rather than fulfilling, because that really, I don't find, you know, gives the whole answer to the person. And people find in the little newspaper that blurb about the sun sign.
Right. Well, when we look at a horoscope, we're actually looking at the all the planets of the solar system, plus the sun and the Earth's moon. Each of the heavenly bodies is said to represent a different type of energy or a different type of force. For example, the moon has a lot to do with our emotions, has a lot to do with the way in which we function just moment to moment in our lives. The sun has a lot more to do with our basic sense of self, what we might think of as the ego, our I consciousness, who I think I am. There's also an important component of a horoscope called the rising sign, which literally means what sign or constellation of stars was coming up above the horizon in the east when a person was born. And the rising sign can pertain to one's personality, literally the social and physical way that one shows up and tells the world, hi, this is who I am. So those are usually considered the three main parts of any horoscope: sun sign, moon sign, rising sign. And if a person has a pretty good grasp on those things, then they're on their way to learning more about who they are. Mercury has a lot to do with communication. Venus has a lot to do with relationship. Mars has a lot to do with physicality. So each of the planets represents or contains information about different ways that we approach life and function within it. Somebody who has a very strong Mars, for example, is going to be a very physical person, whether it means they're very athletic or they just need physical outlet, whether they need to jog or work out in the gym or whatever it is, because they have that much physical energy. So
how do people, I mean, most people do know their sun sign, but
yeah.
Don't you think that's kind of limiting in having an explanation of who you are?
Oh, very limiting, extremely limiting. You know, it's taking everybody in the world and breaking them down into 1/12 of the possibilities of human experience. And what I know about myself is that I'm a fairly complex person, and what I know about other people is that everybody else is pretty complex too. So to reduce everybody to 1/12 of the possibilities for experience and expression, I think, is naive at best. So we try to give a person a more complete understanding of who they are, complete with their possibilities of manifestation and experience, by giving them a complete reading of the entire horoscope, all the planets, the signs that the planets were in, the relationships that the various planets had with each other at the time that a person was born. That's going to give them a much broader, much clearer, and much more accurate sense of who they are. And one of the things that I love the most about being an astrologer is that, in a sense, I get to give people permission to be who they are. I think so many people are they hide parts of themselves for whatever reason. You know, it's not acceptable, or as you were alluding before to my parents, you know, well, my parents wouldn't like this or like that, or my partner wouldn't like this or like that. And I think that, you know, part of the development of human consciousness involves being true to who we are. And if we're hiding that sense of self from others, we're probably hiding a lot of it from ourselves as well. So when we have an accurate horoscope reading, that's, in a sense, the horoscope is like a mirror. We hold it up to ourselves and go, well, that's who I am. And so why not be who I am? Now, of course, there's another issue, which is integrity, principle. In other words, all of the signs of the zodiac, all of the energies of the solar system can be used in what I call a higher octave or lower octave sense. And if all I'm doing is searching for the best way to get something over on somebody else or make as much money as I can, or in other words, screw everybody, it doesn't matter as long as I get mine, that's not what I'm talking about in terms of being true to yourself. But if we are honorable, if we are integral in our relationships to ourselves and other people, then what we're actually doing is working for the greater good for the greatest number. And I think that's a way of being centered in the world and taking full advantage of our potential, not only for our own benefit, but also to support the and benefit everybody else that we know, and ultimately everybody else in the world in one way or another.
Well, to prepare for doing this show, we actually shared some time together on the phone, and you did a personal reading for me, which I found very, very accurate and, again, inspirational. So I do want to let our listeners know that that's something that's available to them. And to find out more, you can always go to starwatcher.com. That's certainly appropriate. But why don't you describe for our audience, you know, what kind of things you're looking for or looking at with someone when they do get a reading with you? I know you have to, you need some preliminary information, like what do you need, and then you set up a time that's appropriate, and then you also sent an audio CD of the entire reading, which was really great to go back and listen because you can't catch it all the first time.
Well, first of all, there's two basic kinds of readings that I give. One is of what we call the natal horoscope, which is a picture of what the solar system looked like when a person was born. The natal chart contains information about who the person is in this lifetime, what are their strengths, what are their challenges, what are their weaknesses, what are their lessons. If a person is doing a lot of personal process work, they're discovering themselves, they're trying to work through some very chronic, challenging issues, the natal chart would be the way to go. A lot of people are also going through major changes at this time, or they're contemplating or would like to go through significant changes. So we can also update the natal chart by looking at what we call transits and progressions. That will give information about which of the patterns in the natal horoscope, either the tools or the tensions, are being highlighted and activated for a certain period of time, or what are some new opportunities, new tools to work with, or new challenges to work through are coming up at in, either are already there or will be coming up in the fairly near future. And whenever we talk about these things, it's not just a this is the way it is, period, end of story, good luck. It also has a lot to do with finding ways out, working with some of the tools, applying them to some of those tensions. How can we grow through the experience of being who I am, whether it's in terms of consciousness or in terms of becoming more effective professionally or socially, for that matter. So we can do the reading on the natal horoscope, we can do a reading on the update. We can also combine the two, obviously, with more of a broad overview. There's going to be less detail. And a third type of reading I do is a relationship reading. So this can be between two people or a family, or whether the two people are lovers or employer, employee, or friends, or whoever the people might be. And that's going to give a lot of clarity about the strengths of the relationship, the challenges of the relationship, how
well, I'd like to add a little to that in terms of my own use of astrology over the years. I really found as a mother, and my kids are pushing 40 now, so we're talking about a long time ago, as the children went through their phases, everything from toilet training to, you know, driving cars, which all parents experience. They're fortunate enough to have the kids watch them grow up. They do come up with challenges because when you think you know your child, then they change into a new phase. And then you kind of have to redo your understanding and your interaction and your whole relationship. So I had a family astrologer throughout all of those years, and I feel it really, really helped to have, you know, quite a smooth parent-child relationship.
Oh, that's wonderful. Good for you. Yeah, it's really neat for me because I've been doing this for so long that I have clients who I read for them, and then I do the relationship reading when they got together, and then I do the children's readings when they had kids, and now I'm doing the kids' readings. The kids have grown up, and so I've got second-generation clients, and that's very, very gratifying for me that, you know, they've consulted with me all these years and decades, and they still find that what I have to offer is valuable to them in their personal process.
Now, sometimes it's, you know, it's challenging to hear the information because it does bring up areas of conflict, areas of difficulty, but I have always found that by sort of hearing about them and validating that, you know, that actually might be why I could never go to the mall with my daughter and not have her fight or something like that,
mm-hmm.
was really very, very helpful in terms of me either not allowing the creation of that conflict situation,
mm-hmm.
or knowing how to deal with it if it arose.
Well, it also, I think, gives a parent a sense about what's in the child's normal range. For example, each of the signs of the zodiac partake of one of four elements: fire, earth, air, and water. Now, the air element has a lot to do with two parts of life. Number one is our intellectual abilities, and number two is our social tendencies. So let's say we have a child, someone has a child that doesn't have very much air in their chart. It's not to say this person is going to be antisocial or asocial, but it's certainly not the kind of kid you're going to drop off at preschool when they're three and say, well, have fun, honey, I'll see you later. This child will go sit in the corner and be completely freaked out. Similarly, you have another child who has tons of air. They're going to can't wait to get out of that car, run in and meet all their new friends and hang out with their friends and be very chatty with their friends. So knowing what is within the normal range of any individual child is a big clue on how to parent them and what to expect from them and to know, well, this is a child with a lot of air who is not very social. What's wrong?
Right, and not feeling that there's something wrong. Well, you know what? We're going to just take a little break right here. And I do want to remind our listeners that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. Our guest today is Rio Oleski. His website is starwatcher.com. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and we love to hear from you. You can get in touch by visiting the website at naturalnurse.com, and we have links on that website so you can get back to Progressive Radio Network, or of course you can go to Progressive Radio Network directly, prn.fm. One of the excellent things about our show and every show right here on Progressive Radio is the fact that you can listen to them live, and we're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. New York time, or you can listen to them anytime on our archive. You can also get in touch by visiting us on Facebook at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We are currently having classes in herbal medicine, herbal certification, so you can get a certification in aromatherapy, radionic healing, herbal medicine, homeopathy, all kinds of fields in natural medicine, and those classes are now available online. We also have a full course available on ground. We finished one in the New York area, and our series for January and February will be in Florida, in Coral Springs, Florida, where we'll be actually having classes in outside herbal identification and a six-hour lecture series, which leads to a certificate and CEUs. So you can find out more at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And today we have as our guest, and today's show will also be archived at Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Our guest today is Mr. Rio Oleski. Rio received a bachelor's degree in humanities from the University of California at Berkeley and a master's degree from San Francisco State University. He is a serious student of astrology since 1967, and of course, being a student, he is truly a professional astrologer and a master teacher. He also writes monthly columns for local and national publications, as well as the book that we are reviewing today, A Manual for the Modern Mystic. Rio is available for personal evaluations and readings, which are quite enlightening, and you can find him at starwatcher.com. So thank you so much for joining us today, Rio.
Thank you, Ellen. It's a pleasure to be here.
And thank you for that explanation of how people can use this information to perhaps look at themselves a little more deeply. And it seems like you're very focused on relationship other than just dealing with the self.
Oh, definitely. Relationships are very complex. People are very complex. Just me getting to know me and being able to live with me is challenging enough. And then I bring another person into the mix, and obviously it's going to be even more challenging again. Well, we see this at the microscopic level of the people in my life, or the macroscopic level of people trying to get along in the world. Over and over again, it seems that people have been trying to get along and learn how to relate to each other since the beginning of time. You can even look at certain very indigenous cultures that may have, you know, a few dozen people in a clan or in a tribe, and there might be another such group maybe 10 miles away, and you know, altogether there aren't 100 people, and yet they might have a hard time getting along with their neighbors. So to understand what a person's drive or desire is in whether it's a relationship or just being seen and being accepted by other people, and helping people to both define what their needs are as well as verbalize them or act in accordance with them is one of the things that I really enjoy doing. Whenever I sit down to give a reading, the first thing that happens is I ask the client a question. Do you have any specific questions or areas of interest you'd like me to focus on? And my joke is that people always respond with what I call the big three: work, health, and relationship. So when we're talking about relationship, what do you need? The question on my mind is, what do you need in a relationship? And most clients will look at me and say, another person, which is not really what I'm asking. Obviously, that's what they need. But specifically, what is it that you're looking for? What are the qualities, the behavioral qualities in the other person that will actually bring you a sense of fulfillment? Is it a way that they are? Is it a way that they will treat you? And it's amazing to me how few people have any sort of understanding of those dynamics at all. It's almost like they expect to just walk into a situation and there's the perfect person without any understanding or definition of what that sense of perfection would actually be or look like or behave like. So I think when we are learning about ourselves and we're working on developing our relationship to ourselves, the next logical extent would be a relationship to another person, whether that person is a parent, a child, a lover, an employer, an employee. It doesn't matter who it is. We still have to hopefully get along with other people in a way that's meaningful to us so that our needs in that relationship are also being met and fulfilled.
Well, what about now some people who are single and looking for a love relationship? Do you think they should prepare by investigating which sign, let's say, or which kind of person might be most compatible, or just, you know, find out about that as you go along? Obviously, you can't do that with your children, you know, other than a spiritual sense of that you choose who your parents are, but you can't, you know, your children are there and you have to deal with it. But what about when you are, like, actively looking for a romantic kind of relationship?
I think the question I get asked more than any other, and I'm sure this is true of other astrologers as well, is that very thing. What sign should I be looking for? And that's the most misleading question that one can ask. There is no answer to that question. As we've said before, people are very complex. To reduce a person down to their sun sign and say, well, that's all I need is to find a good Capricorn or a good Aries or a Gemini, is absurd. Everybody, and that's what an astrologer's job is to help any individual integrate all their various parts, all their various selves, all the different energies through the planets and the signs that those planets are in. How do we integrate that entire collection of influences into who we are and express that sense of self in a positive, productive way? So to reduce somebody we're looking for to one sign is just as absurd. But what we can do is talk about behaviors. We can talk about a person who is sensitive or a person who is verbal and communicative. One of the things that I always stress a lot, and it's amazing how often it comes up in a reading or in a chart, is the importance of establishing a friendship first, if we're talking about a romantic relationship. It's not just about, oh, you're cute, you smell good, let's go to bed, this is going to be fine and wonderful, and oh, by the way, let's have a kid. I think friendship is really, really important, because when we're friends with somebody, there's an automatic commonality of interests and values. As that friendship develops, what comes out of that is a sense of acceptance. And we know who the person is. We don't try to criticize them or micromanage them or control them. We just say, oh, this is my good buddy, and we do this together and that together, and I have more fun when I'm with so-and-so. It's more fulfilling when I'm with so-and-so. Well, that is at least the basis, or can be a foundation for a romantic relationship, but it doesn't have to be. It can just be a good friend. In other words, we're not trying to develop a wink, wink, nudge, nudge friendship. Well, you know, we're just friends, but we know what we're really trying to do. There's no intention there at all other than, hey, let's get together and do what we both enjoy doing and have a good time doing it. And if things go on from there to become more romantic or more heart-connected, and there's the mutual interest in sharing with each other on a more emotionally intimate level, well, then the relationship is going to be quite fulfilling and rewarding and probably long-term, because it's multifaceted. There's just the friendship factor as well as the emotional factor, and then after a while, perhaps the physical factor as well.
Well, I'll say that you are speaking both as an astrologer, and certainly you yourself have a very long-term marriage, so it's not just theoretical.
Yes, this is true. This is true. And my wife has got a lot of Aries energy, and she's been the blessing of my life, because Aries people are very honest, they're very direct, they're very authentic people, and that's a wonderful blessing, because you never have a conversation with an Aries and then go away from that conversation thinking, well, okay, that's what she said, but what did she really mean? So yes, this, I put a lot of the blame for my successful marriage on my wife's shoulders, because she's a wonderful person and has benefited me immeasurably in my life.
Now, in your book, A Manual for the Modern Mystic, you did win a Best Book of 2013 Kirkus Review Award, and it's called A Book of Exceptional Merit. And I would just definitely have to agree, because you bring together so many teachings that obviously you have studied, and yet you bring them along into a common thread. So I find that, you know, really interesting, because you'll talk about themes that are recognized in various ancient traditions, and you talk about the commonality of those themes rather than the fact that, boy, we should have a war and try to kill each other because somebody wants to walk down a different road to get to the same place, which is madness.
Yeah, it is madness. And you know, it's been said many times that religion is a great way of separating people. It's basically very control-oriented, very political, and really has nothing at all to do with the people who propagated the spiritual inspiration that eventually became the religion. In fact, Jesus was very clear, saying in the New Testament, do not build buildings in my name. In other words, don't create a religion and call it the religion of Jesus. It's not why I'm here. And I think it's also important to point out that I think throughout history and around the world, in all cultures, there have always been enlightened people. There have always been spiritual masters and mystics alive on this planet. And many of them have followers, and when the master passes, the essence of the message is usually lost within the first, if not the first, certainly by the second generation. So I think rather than striving or trying to follow somebody else, find a great master or mystic who knows the way and has the answers, I think it's much more beneficial for each of us to try to find our own mystical path to enlightenment and ultimately liberation of the soul. So for me to take the different traditions, the different spiritual traditions from all cultures and throughout historical time period is basically another way of saying that all the spiritual masters, male or female, have all been talking about exactly the same thing. So rather than getting all upset about the name that we are calling the prime deity, let's get down to understanding what the truth, the nugget of light is that all the traditions and all the masters have been trying to get across to us. And if we can find that for ourselves in a meaningful way, then we're on the path.
Well, that seems like a good place to take our next break, because we are going to allow PRN to identify all the wonderful shows that we have available for our listening audience. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion about a manual for the modern mystic and the excellent work offered by its author, Rio Oleski, as well as his monthly column, which is free and wonderful to look at. We'll do that, too. If any of you listeners want to look at the website, starwatcher.com, we'll review some of what's going on there. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Z, and we're so happy that you're joining us. We love to hear from you. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Our guest today is astrologer Rio Oleski, and he's also an author of A Manual for the Modern Mystic, an award-winning book, a book of exceptional merit, according to the Kirkus Review of Best Books of 2013, and I would have to agree. And Rio, I'd like to talk about something that people can sort of start to use right away. Of course, they can get in touch with you for a private reading to elucidate what things they can look at in their life and take action in their life to, you know, reach a more, I would say, a more inspired and holistic view of themselves. And when we use the word holistic, you call your newsletter Holistic Astrology at StoreWatcher.com. What do you mean by holistic astrology?
Well, I try to bring into a reading all parts of the human experience. Some of it is the mundane part, you know, about work and money and health. Some of it's the social part involving relationships, whether it's with friends, family, lovers, or the self. But also looking at the inner self, looking at the emotional self, looking at the spiritual self, looking for information about the inner, or one might say higher, cravings that I think all people have for self-realization or connection to that which is greater than they are. In today's world, everything is so materialistic. Everything is based so much on the money, on the status, on the cars, on the clothes, that I think we've really lost some of the more essential beauty and essential meaning of life that is present when there aren't all these things to dazzle us with their desirability. And so what I try to bring into a reading and into my classes as well is much more of an overview, much more of an integration of all the various parts of life as I understand it, and to help people looking at their chart, help them to access the best ways for them to do the same thing for themselves, so that ultimately they are living a more fulfilling life in a life that encompasses all aspects of reality and what life on Earth in the 21st century has to offer.
Well, in your book, you sort of break down the signs. You don't really go through the signs like, Aries, Taurus, things like that. You talk about the law. And one that I was looking at is the law of abundance, because mm-hmm. people are certainly interested in bringing abundance into their life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think abundance is one of the universal laws. I think, we just look at the physical universe itself, and there's things now with the telescopes we have that are mind-boggling, things that are going on out there. Mathematicians and physicists are telling us that not only is the universe that we know about mind-boggling, but we actually live in a multiverse. And which they can mathematically prove somewhere between 12 and 27 different complete universes. And so just looking at that part alone, the abundance of life through that concept. But I also think there's abundance on a more personal, intimate level, where we have abundance of opportunities available to us. One of the things that I tried to put into each of the laws is what I call a spiritual quality. And if we focus on that spiritual quality or strive for that spiritual quality, then we will bring more of that sense of oneness or that sense of fullness or wholeness into our lives. And the spiritual quality that I think is represented by the law of abundance is joy. And I think that joy is a wonderful quality. And yet, I'm not sure that in the traditional Western European cultures that that's really embraced very much. I think that a lot of the Protestant Revolution was all about, well, you know, God helps those who work hard. So if you work hard, then God will love you. And if you're not working hard, well, at least pretend. But what you don't want to do is being really embracing the joy of life, embracing the happiness. So I think that in some ways we're breaking a cultural taboo by going around feeling joy, expressing joy, acknowledging that joy always exists. It's always available to everybody at all times. Sometimes it's harder to access or accept that or realize that or feel that, but nonetheless, it is there. And so I put joy under the category of abundance because joy is abundantly available, and whenever we feel joy, in fact, one of the ways that we can feel joy is through gratitude prayers, just by acknowledging all the blessings that we have in our life, whether it's good health or good relationship or a fulfilling job or financial security or creative outlet or good friends or whatever it is. And when we literally acknowledge those fulfilling activities in our life, those with gratitude, we feel gratitude for any or all of those things in our life, what we automatically feel is joy. It just comes right up, and there's no limit to that. We can say those gratitude prayers, we can feel that joy, we can feel the abundance of life at any time simply by being open to it.
Now, What sign does the law of abundance, you know, reflect? Because I know there is an overriding sign that goes with each of the laws that you talk about.
The law of abundance is reflected in the sign Sagittarius. Sagittarius is considered the sign of expansion. It's a very, by nature, it's very positive, it's optimistic, it's joyful, it's enthusiastic, it's generous. It usually has a worldview. It has a very good sense of humor. In fact, if SAGE has a downside, it can be too much of a good thing, where we give more than we can afford, we expect more than the world or another person can give, so there can be a sense of disappointment or disillusionment because we set ourselves up with very, very high expectations, either of ourselves, other people, external situations, whatever it is. But as far as being aware of the abundance and feeling the joy, I don't think there's a sign that can compare with Sagittarius for those qualities.
And then there's the challenging parts to it as well.
Right, right. Well, you know, again, there are the challenging parts of each of the signs. And so one of the things that I bring out in a reading is the positive and challenging parts of each of the signs. And one of the things I talk about in readings and classes is the process of centering. Because when we're centered, we're taking into consideration the two most fundamentally important parts of life, which are, on the one hand, we are all eternal spiritual beings, and on the other hand, we're each involved in our own personal physical reality. So we need to be clear about what our physical needs are, whether it's for financial security, food, clothing, and shelter, health maintenance, connection to nature. But we also need to be aware of what the goals or the drives, the longings are of the soul. And to get in touch with those things, we can involve ourselves with a meditation practice or psychotherapy or a 12-step program, anything that helps us to look inside to get a clearer, more accurate, and more abundant picture of who we are, and ultimately, how do we connect with the oneness of life? Well, if we're grounded in the body and growing in spirit, and we don't have to get all the needs in each category met, just be on the path, working toward that clarity. If we are grounded in the body and growing in spirit, we are centered. When a person is centered, they are self-loving. They can access the more positive or higher qualities of all the energies in play in their life that can be represented by any of the signs of the zodiac. Similarly, if one is off-center, either because the physical and or the inner part of that process is not happening to personal fulfillment, then self-love is poor. Self-esteem is poor. They will tend to access and manifest the lower octave options of the signs involved. When I teach a class in beginning astrology, I tell my students that if they get nothing else out of this class and they think I'm the biggest idiot that they ever sat in front of and listened to for 10 minutes, at least remember the importance of centering. And because when we're centered, our life really works. And there is tremendous possibilities for fulfillment and happiness and making a useful contribution to the world. When we're off-center, that just doesn't happen. We get into more victim spaces and self-pity spaces and usually tend to create a lot of misery in the world, especially for ourselves. So, centering is a very important quality, and that helps us to access the higher octave options of all the energies in life.
Now, I'm looking at your website at starwatcher.com, and you make it very easy to navigate, and you do have a monthly newsletter, so we still have posted there the October 2014. When will the November newsletter show up? Right, on November 1st?
Yeah, should be there on November 1st, that's right.
So you post one a month.
One a month, and I believe they are archived. I think people can get in touch with the columns from past months, although, you know, this is current stuff, so I don't know why they'd want to do that.
Right, because what you're looking at here is the state of the world, which,
right,
you know, when we're doing our show today, it seems to be in a great deal of disarray.
Oh,
I mean, the news is not like kind of just the normal news. It's like,
yeah, I know,
the entire world is erupting. Is that reflected in these massive eclipses and all kinds of squares and things like that that you describe in this newsletter?
Well, I think it is. You know, it's interesting. We were talking before about the beginning of the counterculture in the mid-60s, and astrologically, planetarily, one of the things that was happening at that time was a conjunction between two outer planets, Uranus and Pluto, the two greatest planets of change. When planets conjunct, we talk about it as a time of new beginnings. So this was a time of new beginnings, institutionally or in terms of consciousness. All kinds of things were happening, as you know. And now those two planets are 90 degrees apart. We call 90-degree angular relationships a square, and squares always bring up challenges.
Well, we certainly can see the challenges, and I wish we had more time to discuss them, but we're right at the end of time. So I want to inform our listeners, you can read it yourself, starwatcher.com, look at monthly column. Really, really helpful to help us step back and go, wow, what are we seeing going on? And seeing actually, although it looks disruptive, it's in alignment with planetary forces, which are so helpful to understand. So thank you so much, Rio, for being our guest.
You're so welcome, Ellen. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us, as always, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Please get in touch, naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. Until next time, we're hoping that you stay healthy.